Healthcare is too expensive. Employers are offsetting costs onto their employees. Who will make health benefits affordable for hardworking Americans and their families?
You will! This is the Empowering Plans Podcast, a show dedicated to helping you once again emphasize the benefits in your benefit plan. Now prepare to learn,
plan,
save,
and protect with the FIA Group.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to another edition of the Empowering Plans podcast. Today, I'll be your host. I'm Brady Bizarro, an attorney here with the FIA Group. And joining me is my co-host for today, Andrew Silverio. Say hello, Andrew.
Hello, Andrew.
Awesome. Well, we have a special topic today that us lawyers love talking about, an ongoing lawsuit here. This one's a class action that we've seen discussed quite a lot over the last couple of months since it was first filed. And that is this lawsuit, Lewandowski versus Johnson & Johnson. So this was the case we've seen referenced on LinkedIn, other places in the industry, and different news alerts and news blasts, because it's a case alleging fiduciary breach against an employer for failing to contain drug costs. So kind of a new type of lawsuit that we're seeing changing the landscape of fiduciary liability pretty significantly and has some serious implications for the industry. So we wanted to dive into that and sort of give our impressions of what we think is really going on here and what you should know about as a plan sponsor or a TPA or a vendor in the industry and how to sort of better guard against what we think will be more cases like this in the future. So this case here, back in February of this year, a couple months ago, a Johnson & Johnson employee filed a proposed class action in federal district court in New Jersey, and they alleged that the Johnson & Johnson benefit plan, in particular the Committee on Benefits at Johnson & Johnson, breached a number of fiduciary duties by failing to properly manage plan assets and overspending, allegedly, for prescription drugs, that they failed to supervise and monitor conflicted third parties who were overseeing the plan, and that they failed to adequately monitor the list of drugs covered under the plan's formulary. And so they allege that all of these breaches resulted in millions of dollars in damages in the forms of higher payments for drugs and higher out-of-pocket costs and expenses for members of the plan. So essentially, you've got an employee of the plan kind of acting as a whistleblower, right? Bringing a lawsuit against their own employer here because of these ongoing actions. Now, this is interesting because the complaint, and that's all that we have so far, is a complaint in this case. There's been no judicial proceeding, no ruling by a court yet here. So we just have the complaint to work off of. But if you look through the allegations cited, right, there are some pretty extreme examples of the plan paying a lot of money, right, for drugs. One example they give here is $90,000 that was paid for a prescription for a generic drug that could have been purchased from a retail pharmacy. And the plan paid $10,000 for the generic drug, and these retail pharmacies had it available for between $28 and $80 without using the plan's coverage. So that's a pretty extreme difference, obviously, in price. And they also reference a number of potential prohibited transaction issues that involved consultants that were both serving as brokers for the plan itself while also receiving indirect compensation from the PBM. In this case, Johnson & Johnson had selected Express Scripts to serve as the PBM, which is obviously one of the large PBMs out in the industry. And really, the complaint goes on to detail many more examples, right, of what the complainants allege were failures on the part of the benefits committee to sort of rein in the spending or just kind of be on top of what was going on via the PBM. So I'm wondering, Andrew, what caught your eye about this complaint, this lawsuit? What are your sort of initial impressions in seeing this?
Well, the first thing at a high level that really caught my attention was, you know, the fact that we get questions from TPAs, employer groups, brokers all the time about, you know, things like plan waivers, you know, wanting to pay for something, quote unquote, outside the plan, all sorts of, you know, other similar situations that involve a use of the plan administrator's discretion for, you know, incurring a pretty significant plan expense. And we always talk about fiduciary duties and the potential for the plan beneficiaries to bring a claim against the plan administrator for a breach of fiduciary duty anytime you misuse plan assets or fail to enforce the terms of a plan as written. And those concerns are always pretty hypothetical. And, you know, we have to advise, we don't really see lawsuits alleging those things terribly often, but it's out there as a possibility. Here it is, you know, it's real. This is a big case. a perfect example of the type of claim that can be brought in those sorts of situations. So like Brady was talking about, the real shocking, you know, numbers there are some of the prices of these drugs that, you know, tens of thousands of dollars versus a couple dozen dollars if you were to go around your plan and just pay out of pocket. But there's sort of more general concerns here about, you know, just monitoring vendors that you use. These fiduciary duties that we're talking about aren't specific to PBMs. This is a plan administrator or any plan fiduciary's just sort of general duties to oversee their vendors that they use, the way that the plan is spending funds. So this applies to any vendor that you contract with on behalf of the plan, any cost containment program that you use. This has really broad implications.
Yeah, and I would encourage anyone to read through the complaint itself, because it's very lengthy and it goes over many of the more common concepts involved in pricing models that not everyone would be familiar with. For example, it talks about what spread pricing is and pass-through pricing, and it gives some detailed examples about how in certain cases, according to the complaint, a PBM can sort of abuse the spread pricing methodology and sort of overcharging for drugs, and they're incentivized to do that because they're keeping the difference, right, between what they're charging the plan versus how much they're paying to acquire the drug from the manufacturer. So they talk about how, you know, allegedly Johnson & Johnson didn't consider other PBMs that maybe had different pricing models, like pass-through pricing, where they're paying a PEPM, and that they didn't consider that, you know, some of the rebate, the incentives might be misaligned because the PBM was maybe retaining too much of the rebate as opposed to the plan. So it really goes right into detail over some high-level concepts.
Yeah, and that spread pricing model that's discussed in the lawsuit, that's arguably objectionable on its own if it's abused in this way, but it ties right into the fact that the PBM controlled the formulary as well. So with the PBM being compensated, the difference between, you know, what it pays a manufacturer for a drug and then what it charges the plan for a drug, it's also controlling the formulary and has the ability to steer utilization towards the more costlier drug. And it will just snowball the issue and compound it, resulting in even more damages for the plan and even more potential for abuse.
Yeah, I like that word, Andrew, snowballing, because once the plan has signed the PBM agreement, it kind of creates that snowball, because many of the, if not most of the provisions in that PBM contract are going to just compound this problem and sort of tie the hands of the plan, right, and not allow them to be more flexible. One of the things that's discussed in the complaint and that I've seen referenced in other articles about this is, well, you know, the plan tried to use carve-outs and shouldn't have relied too heavily on the PBM specialty pharmacy. Well, I guarantee you that the terms of the contract that the plan signed doesn't allow them to do that, right? So once you sign that contract without sort of reviewing the terms carefully, you're going to probably lead yourself right into being abused by whatever practices the PBM is engaging in. Again, we're not saying that any particular PBM in this case was engaging in abusive practices. That's what the complaint is alleging here. And that's what this lawsuit will sort of work to determine what in fact actually happened. And before we talk about sort of what you can do, what you should do in terms of best practices, I'll just mention that the reason you're seeing this lawsuit and probably a lot more, right? Think back a couple of years when we covered the passage of those price transparency laws, right? The Transparency and Coverage Act, they've kind of functioned as a double-edged sword in many ways, because on the one hand, it's been great to see pricing revealed and posted online, publicly available for plans to see and for patients to see. And you have sort of new players in this space like Cost Plus, the Mark Cuban Pharmacy, which is posting their prices. But on the other side of that coin, right, you're allowing or you're empowering plan members and other interested parties to look and see if they're getting fleeced, because now they know what the prices are if you're not using insurance, right? So this is kind of also sort of leading to these lawsuits being filed, because now you have the ammunition, you have the data that you need to tell how's your plan measuring up, right? What are they paying? And I think combined with the frustration with Congress, the lack of action here, how many more meetings and committee hearings about PBMs and proposals have we seen, or things that have been stalled out in committees, but nothing's really been passed through? The Inflation Reduction Act really was only the tip of the iceberg in terms of price negotiation. It really doesn't help much at all for our industry. And so this lawsuit is a way, arguably, of putting some pressure on the employer plans and also the PBMs to actually take some action here and reduce prices overall, because plans are getting crushed. So
it seems like your standard market incentive of just wanting a better deal in this context doesn't really apply, because the plans will just pass it on to the participants in higher premiums, right? So it's sort of creating, or, you know, highlighting an actual consequence to not being smart with your money as a plan fiduciary, because, you know, we treat health care and health benefits like we treat any other resource, you know, in a, like a capitalist fee-for-service way, but the rules are different. The motivations are different. The consequences are different. And this is an example of how it's just a different system where those rules just do not apply in the same way.
Right. So what do we think is going to happen here in this case, and what would we advise for, you know, our clients to do, for plans and TPAs and even PBMs to do, right? Because we're going to see more of these cases. So first of all, we'll say that it's hard to say at this point. We only have, again, a court filing. It's a complaint. So ultimately, whatever we advise here as consultants might change and probably will change after this case gets decided. But just knowing and having followed, you know, the fiduciary liability landscape for a number of years, you know, starting really in the 401k space where you had plan sponsors there being accused of paying exorbitant fees. And I think it was the Hughes case is the one that we followed a couple of years ago that sort of started this whole process. But one of the important things I think for Johnson & Johnson to show in this case and what we would advise other plans to do is just show that you did your due diligence, right? Things like having a process where you're reviewing PBM contracts using an expert before you sign them, right? Using an RFP process, considering more than one PBM, you know, before you just sign away on the dotted line, showing that you work with experts in this industry to consider things like carve-outs where they're permissible, to try and negotiate drug prices where you can, you know, directly with pharmacies in certain cases, utilizing where you're allowed to manufacturer assistance programs, really just showing that you're doing something, that you're not sort of sitting on the sidelines with your head buried in the sand, just signing contracts, which is kind of what's been alleged here in this complaint. You've got to show that you were aware, you did some digging to see if you could figure out, or any of the brokers involved here conflicted, right? You have these disclosure rules. Did you check those? I mean, what other kind of things would you recommend, Andrew, that plan sponsors do to try and curtail a lawsuit like this from happening?
That last point is what I was just going to bring up. All the new information that plans legally have to have available to them now under the new broker disclosure rules. It's not just brokers. Brokers, administrators, anyone who provides consulting services to a plan. Consulting services are defined very broadly. As a plan administrator or plan fiduciary, you're going to have all this new information available to you. So you should be looking at it. We've had questions about the CAA that these disclosure rules came from, and how do these change fiduciary duties under ERISA? And the answer is that they don't, but they also do, because the actual fiduciary duties are the same as they've always been. You have to prudently manage plan assets. You have to enforce the terms of the plan as written, et cetera, et cetera. But you now have all this new information available to you. So those existing fiduciary duties mandate that you do something with this information. You let it guide your decision-making process and have some increased oversight over these vendors that are working with you and your plan. Make sure they're working for you and not just riding your coattails.
Right. And the market's changing, right? There are many more PBMs emerging on the scene that are regional, that utilize different pricing models that are not, you know, just standards of spread pricing. So understand what the pricing model your plan is engaged with. And if you don't, or you have questions, engage a subject matter expert that understands PBM contracts, that can help you review them, give you commentary and feedback and suggestions. Maybe you can't get everything changed that you want in your PBM contract, especially if you're working with a larger PBM. But if you at least show that you tried, you document a process that, you know, where you reviewed these things, then I think, you know, that will add up to a pretty significant defense and saying, look, you know, whoever's suing you in a case like this, here are the steps that you took, the due diligence that you did, you negotiated where you could, you selected different, you know, options where you thought you had them. I think that's going to be the key here to really trying to thwart off these kinds of lawsuits. But again, we reserve the right to add to our advice here once the case is decided. Again, we mentioned how it was just filed a couple months ago. I expect to see some movement in the summer. These things move slowly, as everyone knows, in the world of litigation, but we're getting along now to the end of April, and I would expect a court to review this case, and we'll see some more court filings that shed some more light on the behaviors here and what happened. But we don't expect this to be the only case like this as we proceed through the rest of 2024. And so we will be watching, you can certainly bet on that, and we'll report on any important cases that come up on this topic as well. But for now, I think that's a pretty good recap of this very important case. If you want more and you have questions, you can always reach out to us. I think we have a blog published on this topic as well. But on behalf of myself and Andrew Silverio and our producer, Pat the Man Santos, I want to thank you all for tuning in to another edition of our podcast, and we'll see you soon.